Shoot the Defence, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Welcome to Shoot the Fence, the most stupid football show on the planet, apparently, according to someone on social media. I'm not going to bring up that link, though, because I choose to ignore people like that. But I'm addressing it here. Welcome again. I'm your host, Stel. I've got two Steves and Rodri Giggs. So, Steve Eyre, welcome back to the show. I didn't do Rod first because Rod fell asleep before last week's show. I missed it, so he goes last.
Hey, Stel, thanks for having me on, mate.
No, thank you for coming on at such short notice. I didn't intend on, you know, having you on only when City lose. It's just one of those things, really.
So. Well, there's a few things to be talked about, but obviously we've talked about in the past on your show, on your podcast, and, you know, the future of the manager, Pep Guardiola, and Manchester City's defence or lack of, we've discussed before, and it's very topical at the moment.
Absolutely. Well, we'll go into that in just a bit because I'm very excited to hear your reaction to City's defeat today, which was quite a big one as well, to be fair. Yeah. But yeah, Steve McCarthy, a.k.a. Luke Shaw's evil brother. How you doing?
I'm good, sir, man. How are you boys keeping?
I'm fine. The other two seem to be all right. I think Rod is all right, but we'll go into him in a minute. But yeah, you been well? I think you're chirpy now that Arsenal are actually winning again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm that really fickle fan now that we've won a few games. I've started piping up saying that
you're going to win the league.
I'm getting my hopes up already. I'm thinking about it now. If we win tomorrow, I will be saying that. I am that sad. I fully admit it.
You'll be chasing Robbie down from AFTV saying, give me an interview, brah, fam, blood. You know it. He's not even denying it. Lovely.
He's killed us.
There we go. Right, Rodri, did you get your power nap in today? Is that why you're here?
I did, actually, yeah.
Excellent. How you been?
Yeah, I'm good. Stez been painting? You've been painting, Stez?
Yeah, it's getting that way, mate, yeah. Yeah, keep that one private.
Alright, well, okay. Right, let's talk about the Premier League, I guess. And shall we start with your team, Steve, or shall we start with United? You choose, Steve. Where shall we go first?
No, honestly, your show. I'm happy to be here as your guest. You choose.
Okay. Rod, let's talk about United then. Get them out of the way. Because last week, they got absolutely dicked against Crystal Palace. This week, they just about snuck a win against Brighton. Brighton hit the post how many times? Twice? Three times? I lost
some
count.
Some guy hit it three times, though.
Yeah. And then you had Solly March that was absolutely destroying United. And, okay, they went a goal up. United scored twice. And then they equalised in the 94th minute, 95th minute, whenever it was. But then Bruno Fernandes scored the winner from the spot, although the referee had blown for full time. They went to VAR because there was a handball incident. And all of a sudden, everyone's had a fucking meltdown. But this is why VAR was brought in, right? Because, you know, clear and obvious errors. It was a handball. It happened. The referee blew for full time. So then he was asked to go to VAR. Because this has happened before in other countries. It happened in Germany a couple seasons ago. Half time, I think it was Mainz against some other team. And the referee blew for half time. And then they said, well, check your VAR because it looks like there was a handball or a foul. And he gave a penalty. So they went back on the pitch, gave a penalty, and they scored. So what's the problem?
Well, there isn't no problem. It was quite clear. They kind of got away with one. To come away with 3 points because Brighton were far, far the better team. But, you know, you know this in football. If you play badly and you get a result, you take it, you know. But, yeah, they've definitely we're outplayed, outworked, and defensively, you know, I lost count how many times that the ball coming across the box to the guy at the back stick, and for someone who's £50 million, who is defensively is shape when it's just. It just needs fixing and fixing quick. I know the second goal, Bruno Fernandes, he switched off. People were blaming Wan-Bissaka, but it was clearly Fernandes' man and he switched off. But yeah, it was a poor result. Some key players not playing very well. But, you know, at the end of the day, we got 3 points. So you've got to be happy with it.
Well, absolutely. But what I have to say is credit to Brighton, because more often than not, you see a lot of teams sit back and defend deep against United and hit them on the counter-attack. And they say to United, keep the ball, do what you want with it. We're going to force you out wide and you're not going to do anything with that. But Brighton had a game plan and it worked to a T. They weren't afraid to get men forward, bodies in the box. They were tenacious. And I think they deserved more than a point, to be 100% honest.
I think you've got to look at the game. Only a few months ago that they won 3-0. They battered them and probably Brighton have thought that's not happening again. You know, we look at Arsenal last year, went there, they got beat. Chelsea drew, Tottenham got beat. So it's a difficult place to go. So, and probably like I said, that fresh 3-0 drubbing that United gave them was fresh in their minds. And they've come out of the blocks and United have been poor. Really, they should have capitalised it and the game should have been well away from United, but they didn't. United stayed in it, and you've got to give them credit to even the goal that went in to make it 2-2, to even to go up the other end to get a corner and to get the penalty. You know, it shows some grit and some courage by the lads. So, but it was a poor display. Some key players, Pogba, Martial, you know, I'm still not sold on Lindelof. Maguire looks like a tugboat turning. Shaw, not great. The only bright probably spark was probably Rashford and the keeper.
Oh, okay. De Gea gets a bit of praise in the show for once. Okay, fair enough. We'll give him that. Mr. Eyre, you know, as a City fan, obviously you're not very pleased with United winning, but at the same time, are you one of those people that are apoplectic with the referee's decision to give the penalty after the full-time whistle blew?
No, I'm a football fan still before I'm anti-Manchester United. I'm not one of these. I want Manchester City to beat Manchester United 2, 3, 4 times a season. Mm-hmm. But what goes on for the rest of the domestic programme I can't influence or get too worried about. I'll just say something that I've mentioned to a few of my pals today, United fans. Huddersfield Town did it against West Brom live on telly at the back end of the season. Empty stadium, and I believe that Brighton did this yesterday. I picked up on it after 5 minutes, but for me, the grass looked 5 inches longer, kept longer to slow Manchester United's rhythm and pace down. That was obvious to me. Now, of course, it's the same for both teams, but without a shadow of a doubt, Manchester United were sluggish at first, but they found a way to win, which is great, like Rodri said. But then I just looked at the playing surface and I just didn't think the ball was passing and moving correctly on top of the surface. You could see it with the tackles. I think the players looked heavy-legged. They're still obviously not match fit yet anyway. But I believe, I can't prove this, but Brighton kept the game, the grass longer to get the game slower to make it more of a contest. And if that game's at Old Trafford, it's manicured the pitch, it's watered heavily before the game at half-time. I believe that was the case that made it a sluggish game at times. I think in the centre-half positions, they've got 2 second centre-halves instead of 1 proper number 5. Maguire's had 4 relegations. Lindelof's coming in for a little bit of stick. Rodri's right about Maguire with his turning circle and his speed. He's getting a bit of stick at the moment. So he's fighting, you know, a few little battles possibly in his mind, but all the time I think he's painfully slow and painfully soft, and he never sorts a centre-forward out aggressively. You never ever see him sort one out physically, and I don't think he's obviously, you know, that great despite being England centre half. But thankfully for United, they've got an improving manager in terms of how to get games won, which is a fact because of the run they've been on over 6 months. You know, they have improved and they've got great young attacking players at the top end of the pitch that can help them get a result. And what Man United did yesterday was they simply found a way, whether it be within the rules or not, they found a way. And what great composure from probably the best player for the penalty.
Fantastic. And Rod's just done his best Aaron Wan-Bissaka impression. Invisible. Just disappeared. Not there. Anyway. But Steve, one more thing before we move on to Luke Shaw. One more thing before we move on to the other Steve, the Luke Shaw version two. You mentioned United's fitness.
Yeah.
I heard Rio Ferdinand talking about the lack of pre-season and how it's nonsensical that people can blame that. But on the flip side, look, I'm not a professional footballer. I've never played professional football. But surely having a pre-season is imperative to get you on the right track, no?
Yeah, it is. But obviously, they went deep in the Europa League, including travel. They've not had that 2 weeks of doing nothing at home, then that 2 weeks on holiday with the family. But there's so many other footballers haven't had that too. But, you know, it's the best job in the world. And I don't think you'd lose that much fitness at the start. You'll gain it just as quick. And United have got supreme athletes. So their fitness and their pace will be fitter and quicker than other teams in the Premier League to go with the talent. Like I say, I know I've just touched on it quite heavy there. I challenge anybody to watch the first half of the game back and just actually see the playing surface and see how long that grass was. And I think if the game's at Old Trafford or the next time they play, they'll be better for the game that they've just played and won. And they'll also be on a pitch which will be shorter of grass and it'll allow for a quicker moving game. I'm convinced that's what Brighton did to keep the game tighter.
They've done a John Beck special there.
Yes.
If anyone just remembers him.
Well, John Beck used to put it in the corners, yeah. Just leave it long in
they
the
used
corners.
To keep it long, pump it long, yeah. So it hold up to the wingers to get onto it.
And what he used to do was, if it was a good ball, he'd shout to his team, Quality Street. And if it was a bad ball, he'd shout, Heartbreak Hotel. And the players knew exactly what he meant. It was a weird setup, but it was a tactic he used, leaving the long grass in the corners. But I believe Brighton's pitch was 5 inches longer than the normal regularity. I'm guessing, but I believe it passionately.
So do you think Brighton will do that against the likes of Arsenal, your Liverpools, your Man City, where their football is more fluid?
Yes, I said that to the lads I was watching the game with, and then you watch, you know, the games that they'll feel they can win. You know, West Brom at home, you know, maybe like a Southampton, could even be Sheffield United or Burnley this season. You watch it, but it's a different playing surface, and if the cameras go onto it, I bet it's been drenched with water before and at half time. I didn't see any of that yesterday. I think they were trying to slow Man United down.
Brilliant, 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 brilliant. Mr. McCarthy.
Hi.
Okay, so talk to me about Chelsea, because that's the next game we're going to discuss. They were 3-0 down at half-time against West Brom. They forced it back to 3-3. Here you've got a club that spent millions and millions of pounds this summer. Frank Lampard can't hide behind the transfer embargo like he did last season. Don't get me wrong, he did very well, you know, to get Chelsea into the Champions League, to get them into a cup final. But now... It's the pressure's been cranked up, hasn't it?
Yeah. So last time I was on here, I think it was me and KG were just going in on Lampard because we said he's going to get found out this season. And what I will say, credit to Chelsea for coming back from 3-0 down in 45 minutes. And it does throw in that cliche of it's a game of two halves and they went full at it. But Lampard is now starting to realise the struggles of managing a top club. Last year was almost like a soft season for him. Had the transfer ban, had to use the players he was given, and the fact that he was promoting youngsters, that's a massive tick in all the Chelsea fans. For all the Chelsea fans, they're bringing through youngsters. Chelsea had never really done that. I think the last main academy graduate was John Terry, and now all of a sudden you're seeing all these boys come through, and it has helped with Jody Morris from his time being the under-21s manager, and where they had the relationship where they were being loaned out at Derby last year, 2 years ago. But Lampard, Chelsea lack identity at the minute. When I'm watching them play, it almost looks like Lampard doesn't quite understand, doesn't quite know what team he wants to play or how he wants to play them. And when you look at their squad, as I said, it's bloated as anything. Some of these players will be shitting themselves because they're getting sold before the end of the transfer window or loaned out. He needs to get rid of some dead wood there. And after spending so much money on seven new players, how he's going to try and fix that and sort the dynamics within the team to make sure that they're firing on all cylinders, they know the setup, I think he's going to struggle. the Brighton game was one thing. West Brom yesterday was another one of, you know, they got the point, but are they going to be able to weather the storm and find their rhythm in time? And I hope not.
Well, this is it. When, you know, we were discussing Chelsea's ideal back four last week, and we're saying it's going to be James, Chilwell, full-back, centre-backs will probably be Thiago and Rudiger. But it looks like Rudiger's on his way out. Now, Thiago had a nightmare of a debut. You'd have thought that he's come from the third division in France, not the top league. But let's be 100% honest. This guy has got bags of experience. And no doubt, he will learn from this baptism of fire and turn things around. I think, anyway.
Yeah, I think so too. I think one of the, in part, going back to sort of Lampard's management, I think the naivety was getting rid of some of the more experienced players, especially in the back line. They don't seem to have a leader there other than Azpilicueta, who isn't a centre-back and he's not going to be a first-choice full-back for them. So do they have that experience there to control the back line, to set whether they move high, go compact, go deep, depending on the situation? And they've brought Thiago in, who I think would be a massive boost to the team, more so off the pitch as on the pitch. But yeah, he doesn't know his best back line, and he's gone. I think he's kind of stitched Thiago Silva up by playing him so soon. I don't think he's had a chance to sort of be blooded in as effectively as he could have done buying into the system. And then West Brom, they saw it as soon as they saw the weak spot in there. They just outright attacked him.
Yeah, true. Well, Rod, I read a stat that since the start of last season, Chelsea have conceded more away Premier League goals than any other team. I mean, that's an utter shambles, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got it puzzles me that, because you could identify it last year that they got Zouma and whoever they had, and that needed to be sorted. And it puzzles me, because I think as a manager, that's where you'd start, because, you know, ultimately defence is going to mostly probably the best defence wins the league or close to it. And yeah, and so many goals leaked last year, and it started again this year. You know, 3-0 down, it was quite embarrassing at half time. And for a club of the size of Chelsea, for West Brom, who've just been promoted. And yeah, I thought the knives were going to be out where they were out already, but they've done really well to come back and get it to 3-0. But yeah, I don't think Thiago Silva is the answer. You know, this guy was in his prime, let 7 goals in this quarter final or semi final of the World Cup, and that was in his prime. He's at Paris Saint Germain, where he's round top class players. He's round Zouma and Christensen, so they're not great. So I think he's got to have good players around him. So I think he will struggle this year. You know, he's at the wrong age of 35. He's not the quickest. Yes, experience will get you so far, but I think the physicality and the pace of it and the constant games will be too much for him.
And Steve, obviously Slaven Bilic will be disappointed with playing a 3-goal lead, but this is the Premier League. You can't go 3-0 up at half time and just take your foot off the gas, which it looks to me that West Brom did that, no?
Yeah, I thought he probably couldn't believe either, Stel. He probably couldn't believe he was 3-0 up, and then probably couldn't believe that he'd been pegged back to 3-all. Another 5 minutes to have lost the game, I think. Chelsea were coming on that strong. But it's an unforgiving league, but he's an experienced international manager. He's played in England, and in the capital, and knows that club. But, you know, the Premier League is getting harder. The forward lines are getting better and quicker at every club. And he'll, as a defending manager, as a player that was a defender, he'll obviously have to try and, you know, sort his own back line out if he's got any chance of staying up. To Chelsea, they had 50% of the back four last year, which was settled. Azpilicueta at right back and Alonso at left back, and he just kept flipping the centre halves all the time, Frank Lampard. But now the emergence of Reece James and the signing of Chilwell basically means he's probably got 8 or 9 defenders for 4 slots. Which was what you were saying before, that the squad is bursting, really. And he needs to release, sell, loan, whatever, But equally, he needs to settle that back four down and give them a run of games. And even though they didn't win yesterday, if that's going to be the back four, they'll be better for the experience, even though it wasn't a good one, you know, for the debutant.
Absolutely, absolutely. And let's move on to two games that involved controversial penalty incidents that left their managers absolutely fuming. There was Joel Ward's handball for Crystal Palace against Everton, which gave Everton a penalty, which led to their 2-1 victory. And in injury time today, Eric Dier's handball, I don't even want to call it a handball because he was, I don't even know, gave Newcastle a penalty and earned them a draw at White Hart Lane when we thought that, you know, Spurs were going to hold on. Rod, naturally, Mourinho and Hodgson were absolutely fuming at full time. And I can see why. Okay, I can understand Mourinho's frustration because the ball hit the back of Dier's hand when it looked like he needed his arms to jump. Otherwise, he's going to be like a salmon, you know, or a fish out of water. Joel Ward's one, I can see why that was given. But at the same time, this new penalty rule, this handball rule, is pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous. Same one as Lindelof last week. Just ridiculous. It's just, there's no way. They know nothing about it. So, and yeah, it's a difficult, it's quite a simple one, but if it gives you advantage in a goal-scoring opportunity, then it's handball. If, you know, if it's deliberate handball, it's handball. If it's accident handball, then it's not handball. It's just quite clear. And yeah, they're making the balls up it, and they need to sort it out because it's just becoming an absolute shambles. It's just a joke. That Eric Dier one. What can he do? I don't know what he can do. He's just jumping up, and you obviously jump up with your arms, and it's just, yeah, it's... You've got a feel for Mourinho and the Tottenham side, but then again, it's a good point for Newcastle, and they'll take it. But yeah, to answer your question, it needs to be sorted out because it's just, like I say, it's a shambles.
Mr. Shaw, Rod said that was a good point for Spurs. A good point for Newcastle. But at the same time, when you look at the chances that Spurs missed, they'll be kicking themselves, won't they?
Oh, God, yeah. Mourinho will be absolutely seething, and whilst he can use the dubious penalty decision as a sort of deflection, he'd have to be a little bit more frustrated with their failure to put the chances away. Now, I know Darlow had an absolute worldie in goal today with quite a few saves, but especially coming off the back of last week's victory against Southampton, I know they had to play slightly differently because Southampton were vulnerable with a high line. I don't think Spurs had that sort of clinical edge to them. And it's going to be a worry because if Harry Kane isn't scoring and Son isn't scoring, who's now injured, where are the goals going to come from? Because it's not going to be... Oh, don't say that. I was going to say, because it's not going to be Dele Alli because he's going to be shipped out by the looks of it. And then it's going to have to be Bale and Moura that are going to be providing everything.
True. Steve, I don't know if you've watched the Amazon documentary with Spurs. There's one scene where Mourinho basically said that his players need to toughen up. They need to be cunts. And for me, I haven't seen any change in Spurs. They're not physical enough. They're not aggressive enough. For me, they don't look like they've got a winning mentality, and their heads drop when things don't go their way. What more can Jose Mourinho do to make this team... Oh, is he gone? He's still there. So what more can Jose Mourinho do to make this team the gladiators they want them to be?
Is that me, Star?
That's you, mate.
Yeah.
I just think that I've got a point for you all in a minute, lads, that I've only really just thought of, but Jose Mourinho is going to get better with this team. I think he's interviewing better. He didn't get involved in any nonsense. I think he's done some really good PR recently. Some kind reporter saying, could you have a picture with me for my dead father? And it was a lovely thing, a gesture. Yeah, come and see me at the team hotel. That's got nothing to do with the results, but they've got the best player they've had in the last 10 years coming back to the club as a stellar signing. I think they can get better. Getting Harry Kane involved a little bit more to score more goals. by getting him inside the box could help with Bale in the team if he gets fit and fires straight away. I think Tottenham can be better than the frustrations they've shown in the last 12 months. But just to throw it at you there, I think the game could change from this weekend, you know, moving forward to how it used to be. I think it's come away from teams crossing balls into the box, sometimes just jumping in there. And I think it's changed with wingers going on the opposite side of the pitch to try and dribble and shoot and lots of little passes around the 18-yard box. But now, if referees are going to give penalties as easy as they had this weekend, then centre-halves are going to be frightened to death to jump. So the likes of Giroud, yeah. Andy Carroll, Ibrahimovic in a different country. But that type of player that has gone out of fashion recently in the Premier League could easily come back, maybe even as an impact sub, because teams will be encouraged now to cross the ball in the box because defenders will not want a jump and it'll be advantage to the attackers.
You know, I mean, United...
Doesn't this new law or rule change mean that players that got the ball in the box will be more encouraged to kick the ball against the defender's hand because they know they'll get a pen?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, Newcastle today had nothing. You know, the camera went on to Shelby. He asked Andy Carroll, do you want me to float it or do you want me to drive it? The camera was on him at the time. I thought it was a poor free kick because it was so wide of the goal. Absolutely no threat to Tottenham at all. And then one half header and it's hit, you know, shaved Eric Dier's bicep or something. And it's a penalty in the 95th minute and it's a draw. So I think this will... if it's going to be fairness, that improves the game by the cameras. But I think it'll actually lose the quality of the game because I do think you'll see a hell of a lot of clubs now just lumping the ball in the box, which we have just come away from in the last 2 or 3 years.
Oh, good.
The crazy game days are back.
I can't wait for Liverpool, both Andy Robinson and Trent Alexander-Arnold to do that about 12 times tomorrow. And David Luiz to get his elbow on the end of it, about four of them. So
he's going to score a winner for you guys, isn't he, Luiz? <Louise. laughs> You just know the amount of times you've been criticising the guy. He's going to do something for you lot.
No. But going back to Steve's point, it is actually quite an interesting aspect because if managers are going to be smart and savvy to it, if they know that it's such a vulnerable area, you will see the ball getting flown into the box. And I think... looking at teams like United, even United are sort of well adapted to that because they've got Ighalo they can use. So teams have that sort of plan B where they can lump it in. They will get chances. They will get potential penalties from it.
Sorry, I just muted myself a bit too long there. Fucking hell, sorry. Rod, talk to me about Crystal Palace because they started the season off pretty well. They obviously lost at the weekend to Everton. We were saying at the season preview that they're going to struggle and they really need to get the average age down. But looking at their squad at the moment, okay, granted, there isn't much depth. But when you've got players like Wilf Zaha on form, when Eze becomes a better player, Jordan Ayew will get them a few goals. Andros Townsend is now chipping in with goals, even with his right foot. And he's actually got Cech Kuyat playing at centre-back and he seems to be working. Now... I don't think they're going to struggle as bad as we thought they would originally, but that all depends on if the teams below Crystal Palace improve. Now, obviously, this defeat is going to give them a bit of a dip in confidence, but can you see them bouncing back straight away?
Yeah, because they've had a quite a decent start. They've won two and they've lost one. Is that right?
Yeah, they beat United.
They won the first game too. So
Southampton.
Yeah, so they've had a good start. Everton, the same, had a good start. They've had some good signings there too. They have got an absolute stellar manager. So you're only going to... Usually Everton are slow starters. They've come right out of the blocks this year, obviously, because like I said, they've got a stellar manager and he knows what he's doing and he's got them... He's got him getting results. So, yeah, it's a good win for him because, like I say, Palace have had a good start. But to answer your question, I think that they can bounce back. You know, they've got a good, solid, you know, safe manager. He's not going to win you the league, but I don't think he'll get you relegated either. So, yeah, I think they'll be fine. And I think to answer your question, I think they will bounce back because who's he got the next game?
Pass.
You tell me that.
Pass. I don't know.
Is it? Is it home? It doesn't really matter if it's home or away. There's no crowd anyway, is there?
No.
But that's a hindrance to the teams like Crystal Palace, because Crystal Palace is a very, very, very difficult place to go.
They're away to Chelsea.
Away to Chelsea.
Well, they're away to Chelsea. So that's it. You know, it's a good. Is it a game you would want? Is it a game where you would want if you'd just been beat? If you're asking me, it would be for me. So
I'm sure. Well, the way Chelsea defending recently, yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And with Zaha, the form he's on, I'm pretty sure they're relishing going there, and they can have a look at the film and go through things with West Brom and try and, you know, pinpoint some key areas they can take advantage of.
Stez, Everton have conceded the most goals from set pieces since the beginning of last season. When you've got someone like Keane and Yerry Mina, two towering defenders, and Jordan Pickford, England's number one, that's got to be a cause for concern for Ancelotti. Now, I mean, let's be honest, he bases his team on a defensive structure. They're very organised. And going forward this season, they're extremely dangerous. But when you see the way that Cheick Kiat scored yesterday, the way the ball went literally through Jordan Pickford, he must be doing his nutting, surely.
Yes, that's a decision he'll have to make. I'm not sure he's that much under threat for his place in the Everton team. He probably is for England, but obviously those set plays don't get noticed if there's a free header in the box often, but it's missed of the target or the goalkeeper makes a save. But if you're getting punished from it, it gets highlighted more. He's not likely to come and catch your punch. He's likely to be like a Shea Given type, who makes saves from the line, and when he does make them, they'll probably be absolutely amazing, just like Shea Given used to. But there's no room or margin for error there because of your positioning. You don't see him coming along, and even goalkeepers actually sometimes go for a free kick still, knowing for a fact that they're going to get fouled, take the hit and take the free kick, and nothing happens in your goal. You get the feeling that Pickford isn't going to do any of that, so he's not going to come and catch, he's not going to come and punch, and he's not going to come and get fouled. So eventually, I think Everton will replace, because I think the way they're progressing at the moment with the manager and the outfield players, and obviously Pickford's well worth his place in a domestic season for Everton. But if they're going to stay in and around the top six, I think that would be one position that they will change.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. And when you look at the players that Everton have that can defend set pieces, like your Andre Gomez, your Yerry Mina, Michael Keane, who else have they got there? They've got Doucouré, that's quite tall there. Again, you've got to be defending these set pieces better. And I don't know, look, again, I don't know whether a zonal marking system is best when you're playing against a physical, attack-minded side like Crystal Palace, who've got players that are good in the air, or do you go man for man with them? But then again, as I said, because they're physical and because they're quick, is that not a danger? So again, when you look at Crystal Palace's goal, it was a mess all around.
Yeah, you can put Calvert-Lewin in there as well, because if he's in the attacking box and he keeps getting first to every ball with his head, then you can guarantee he's going to be nearly as good in his own box as well. So there's another asset they've got in both penalty areas. I do think zonal marking is the way forward, and a lot of teams are doing it, albeit it leaves you with four marking four at the moment, and you normally have four or five alongside your six-yard box. But like I say, I think it comes from having an active keeper that comes through bodies and takes the pressure off, and I don't think they've got that. And I think that probably puts a little bit of nerves into the defenders of Everton, because they know it's completely on them. Because, you know, we all know ourselves the levels we've played. There's nothing more reassuring than when you go back and defend a corner or a free kick into your box than when you think, I know our keeper's coming for this. It just makes you feel better. But these lot are going back thinking, I know our goalkeeper's not coming back for this. Now, I know you've got to step up and take responsibility, but let's not forget the other team want to score as well. And there's that many good free kick takers and that much height in teams these days. Everton will definitely have to improve in that area for sure.
So would you say that Pickford isn't brave enough to do it, or maybe he's just not used to doing that?
No, it's not a bravery. He's just playing the card of, lads, if I come, I'm going to leave my net completely open, and I'm not the biggest of goalkeepers, and I'm not going to get the ball. The best I can get is a free kick. So I think he's protecting himself, but it's not helping the team. If he was told, I want you to come for every ball, I'm sure he would. I think he's got the bottle. I don't think you can question his courage, but I just think he's playing to his strengths and hiding his weaknesses still. And he's staying on his line, because if he come out and ran 5, 6, 8, 10 yards to catch your punch, he'll probably miss.
Okay, so final question on Jordan Pickford. If he's not England's number one, and if he's not a £50 million goalkeeper, does he get dropped?
Eventually, yes. Eventually, yes. But with Nick Pope conceding goals, not winning games, and sat towards the bottom of the league, Henderson not playing for Manchester United, he doesn't have a challenger for his England jersey just yet. So it's his time at Jordan Pickford at the moment. And let's have it right. You know, let's be really fair to the lad. He's the goalkeeper that plays for the top of the Premier League at the moment. You know, so he's doing his stuff. We pick holes in his performances and the goals go in the net. But he is sat on top of the Premier League as a footballer, as a goalkeeper, you know, this evening. So, you know, we're giving that credit too. But I think over time, if England progress and Everton progress, he won't be in net. That's my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, Burnley lost 1-0 to Southampton. Mr. McCarthy, your thoughts on Southampton's incredible win at Kabaddi FC?
sorry, you've actually thrown me on that one. I think it's a test. I think last week was such an anomaly for them against Spurs, where, because the goals last week, they came in a sort of a short flurry, and it was the same tactic every single time. I think they've had to learn from that today, and they've got the early goal, and you've had to see them be a lot more resolute as a team. And Burnley just look out of sorts at the minute. I'm just looking at the stats. Like, they had more possession, they had more shots, and when I say more shots on target, they had two. Southampton had one shot on target and scored from it. So for all the abuse that even I held my hands up to, that we give Pickford, I mean, Nick Pope's got to look at himself there, and they said, you know, they've had one shot on target and he's conceded. It's not good.
I've got to say, the biggest thing for me is that Burnley, with their hard-working effort that helps them get points to stay in the Premier League every year, they can lose players, they can lose Ashley Barnes, they can lose Chris Wood, they can lose Jack Cork. But if you lose either of Ben Mee or James Tarkowski,
yeah,
then you're going to lose the glue of a team. Now, the fact that they've lost both at the same time, for me, with Jimmy Dunn and Kevin Long playing there at the moment, there's no doubt in my mind that that goal is going to get breached, yeah, because I believe Tarkowski and Mee as a pair are the glue of Burnley Football Club and would be a miss for any team, but a huge miss for them.
Yeah, Dyche has sort of alluded to this. He has got a paper-thin squad at the minute, and to lose two key central defenders is a massive one for him. But the fact that he hasn't got anyone that can, I even say, do a job. Like, I didn't think either of the centre-backs looked convincing, nor will they look convincing until one of me or Tarkowski gets back. But I do think if Burnley don't sort themselves out, they're going to drop more points. And then before you know it, it's an uphill battle. Every game that they go into, where they've had the hard work and the grit and they can grind out the results and maybe get a point here and there, or even the three, I think they're going to struggle to even do that. And I think it's similar with Sheffield United. And I know we'll pop onto them in a minute, but I think they're going to have the same issue.
Yeah.
When you come into the Premier League, the hard work will set a great foundation for you, but you need to build on that. You need that talent there as well. And it's finding the right balance of hard work and the talented players who might not do as much of a defensive shift. Burnley have got the hard work. I don't think they've got the talent, especially with injuries now. They haven't got that talent readily available for them to win games. Dwight McNeil, I'll tell you what, if a Premier League club wants to circle around him, he's a great winger in the to be signed.
Yeah.
And I think he's struggling.
It suits that we play two up front normally, you see, and he's the one that can put crosses in and they're likely to get on the end of it. But I know every single team can talk about this, but it's, for me, Sheffield United are the ones who are struggling the most. I spoke to an ex-Sheffield United player who gained promotions with them. I probably best not say his name. because of the secret that he gave me. But he said, now Sheffield United is Bramall Lane is a lovely place to go and play your football if you're the away team. Whereas previously, the crowd had such a big importance on them getting points in and those promotions. And that's the, that's this COVID pandemic problem now. It's the away games now, the crowd taken away is making it such an easier challenge for the away team coming to town. You don't have to settle the noise down, and you don't get the home crowd making the home team nervous because they're moaning and groaning. It's a lovely place to go and play football now, Bramall Lane. So I'm probably going to say the same about Turf Moor.
Well, the thing is, Burnley, as you mentioned, I think they've got seven senior players out, which is huge for any club. I mean, if you take seven senior players out of Liverpool, they wouldn't be the same side. So can you imagine how that's affecting Burnley at the moment? But I've got to credit Sean Dyche, because he's actually come out and stuck it on the chairman. He said, right, yeah, you know, he knows that we need to bring in faces. I know Dale Stevens came in from Brighton on Thursday, but that ain't going to be enough for Burnley, and they really, really need to get the checkbook out. Because let's be 100% honest, with the money that's come in from the TV revenue, that kind of stuff, and I know COVID has obviously hurt them financially, but over the past few years, I think they've had like two top 10 finishes. And I think, weren't they in the Europa League at one point? So it's not as if they don't have the funds to bring in players. I'm not saying that they can bring in top-level players for 20, 30, 40 million pounds, but if they've got the right scouting system, which they do, they can unearth a few James, especially from the Championship, League One, to come in and do a job. But at the same time, these players are going to need to bed in and gel. And again, it's going to be down to Dyche to work his magic, so to speak.
Yeah, I think Harry Wilson's going to be the next one they're trying to get.
He'd be a good signing.
And they'll have to pay a lot of money for that. But that's, you know, Mike Rigg is the technical director who I work with at Manchester City. There's obviously a board of directors. There's rumours of a takeover. And Sean Dyche, is, as you quite rightly say, Stel, he's almost saying, well, I've got us this far overachieving. Just look what we could do if you back me a little bit more, because I'm overachieving with this, and we're punching above our weight. And he's absolutely right. And I don't think he's being out of order with the demands, but he is just starting to look a little bit restless himself, and his team just look a little bit tired without those centre-halves. So naturally, the results are suffering as a consequence.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see if they can turn it around. I think they'll be able to turn it around eventually. You know, once their players resume training and get that sharpness and back into the first team, we'll see Burnley causing...
Karen. I was going to say, if they get a few loan signings in just before the end of the window, because I know that shuts soon, we've talked about like clubs having sort of a plethora of players. Like Chelsea have got far too many on their books. Everton are quite a bloated team. Arsenal have about eight centre-backs, only though two or three can actually play football. Like, there is opportunity, there is scope for Burnley to potentially sign a few of them on loan, even if it is just for up until the Christmas period, until the next window, just to keep them ticking over. Because at the minute, as other Steve pointed out quite correctly, you take out their two centre defenders and you're playing Kevin Long and Jimmy Dunn, who is 22, spent last season on loan at Fleetwood. Mm. Like, that is a big ask for a... Hmm?
Yeah, I was his coach. He was I was saying he was poorly coached. I was his coach. But I'm delighted to see him play in the Premier League and score a goal on his debut. He's a lion heart. But you're quite right. You're asking a lot of him to play at the top end of the Premier League. But he is doing it to his maximum. And so is Kevin Long, very much in the same character as the manager himself. He'll have faith in them because he was that type of player himself. But you're exactly right in what you say. They're just going to survive, you know, with those two as a pair and others, and eventually, you know, go backwards. Whereas with Tarkowski and me and some support from the board, Sean Dyche obviously thinks they can go forward. It'll be interesting to see if Tarkowski leaves, because I think Leicester have bid 30 million and mysteriously he's not kicked a ball yet this season. So yes, he's probably injured, but equally they could be making sure he doesn't get injured before he gets sold. So that could be a blow for them yet to come.
Well, Phil Jones is available. Marcus Rojo is available. Hey, Jesse Lingard is even available. So, you know, Mr. Dyche, you know, you can have him. Take him. I don't think anyone wants him.
Jim Burley can afford them wages.
Oh, you know, the way that United operate, they'll probably pay 70% of their wages. Yeah. They paid half of Rojas when he went to Argentina.
United will probably pay more than their wages just to get him off the club.
Yes.
Phil Jones is on 100 grand a week. We'll pay him 110 if he goes to you.
Dutch is like, no, it's okay. It's all right. Hey, you're going to used to play for Blackburn, so I don't think he'd want to go there, would he?
The next Brian Robson.
What's it that Fergie said? He's the next Duncan Edwards. I'm like, wasn't Duncan Edwards like a left winger or something?
Bless.
Oh, Jesus. Right, let's talk about Leeds United. They beat Sheffield United 1-0. Yorkshire derby, goal from Patrick Bamford. A guy who we said at the beginning of the season would pull up some trees. Rod said anyway. I'll give Rod his due credit.
There you go. I know a strike when I see one.
Well, look, let's be 100% honest, right? If it wasn't for Meslier, the Leeds goalkeeper, Sheffield United would have won this one with ease, but he pulled off two fantastic saves. One from Lundstrom was immense. I know it was straight at him, but the way that he adjusted his body was absolutely fantastic, Rod. And Leeds United kept a clean sheet as well. Wow, what's going on?
Yeah, keeper saving a shot. Nah, he's done his job.
Whilst having the hair.
No, you just said he saved two great saves, but one was straight at him. That's his job.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, look at the second save with his left hand. I mean, that as McManaman said, strong left hand.
Again, it's his job. That's what he's supposed to do.
Oh, look at him playing it down. Come on.
No, Roger's been watching his Roy Keane videos.
That actually did come in my mind when I thought about it. But
I was going to say, the bar's been set so low at Leeds with Kessié last season because he had one of the worst save percentages. So when Stel's there saying the keeper saved a shot, it is actually a cause for celebration. But Leeds fans haven't seen that.
Yeah, with the win, like Stez says, they're going to suffer with not the fans. But Sheffield United, no hidden gems now. People have seen them play and can try to work a bit more on the coaching side of the game and try and snuffle what they do. And yeah, they're going to struggle this year. I think they're really going to struggle. Last year, I thought they'd do well. I think this year, I think they're my favourites to one of the three to go down.
Really?
But Leeds will be safe. We talked about that at the start of the season. I think Leeds will do well and then drop at the end of the season, but still be mid-table.
Okay, fair enough. Stez, what do you make of Leeds United so far this season? We've seen them with their swashbuckling style of football, getting men forward, full-backs overlapping, delivering balls into the box at Bamford, who seems to be quite isolated, but he's doing a fantastic job up top on his own. They've got a few handy players there, but do you think they'll be able to last the pace?
Well, supposedly, you know, the training regime and the fitness levels and the running data is ridiculous, which made them fairly breeze the championship last year. It'll be enough for them to survive in the Premier League. I agree with Rodri. The opposite for Sheffield United, who are suffering, I think. I can almost pinpoint the moment when Ollie Norwood scored the ghost free kick goal at Aston Villa last year that wasn't given. And the machine in the goal was broke and things like that. Almost from that moment, I think Lundstrom's been sent off. I think Lundstrom's missed a penalty. They are losing football matches. They've got Jack O'Connell out for a year now, their best defender. So where Leeds are concerned, I think they're in a good vein of health and fitness, and I think they've got things going for them. And sometimes the harder you work, the luckier you get. And I know it wasn't lucky that they scored in the last minute. You know, that's a myth, but Bamford was in the right place at the right time. But I think they've got more than enough. I think they've got a clean bill of health to have a good season in the Premier League. And I'm just pinpointing different things with Sheffield United that are symptoms of things that are head-scratching, really. But like I say, the ghost goal, penalties, own goals, sending-offs, injuries, it's just stuff that happens to teams that are, like, on the slide. And I bet Chris Wilder just can't believe the change in his fortunes and his team's fortunes. And he probably won't know how to flip it tonight. It's a real challenge for him and his team.
Well, it's interesting you say that. You know, he might not be able to flip it, because I was about to ask, like, do they need to see perhaps a sports psychologist? How are they going to, you know, get themselves back on track? Because, as you mentioned, there's so many key factors that have gone against Sheffield United. And, you know, some of them occurred last season, but it's almost as if they continued their form from the back end of last season, or shall I say when football resumed after COVID. Yeah. And it's continued up until now. So what can he do to fill these guys with confidence? That maybe one or two signings would make a bit of a difference, but at the same time, that might actually rattle some players, because they're thinking, well, we've worked our bollocks off and here we are with players that are threatening our places in the team.
Still, well, I think it's fair to say, I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's been one of the best managers in England in the last 5 years. I want to say that. But that's a little bit of a miss is the recruitment. I think the players that have done well for Sheffield United have been there a while. Obviously, I think Henderson is 12 points in goal better than Ramsdale from Bournemouth, who just relegated. I believe 12 to 15 points better, which is huge. Like I say, O'Connell's out for a year, Basham, Egan. But look at the players that you forgot they've signed. They've signed Ravel Morrison. Who's gone? They've signed Jack Rodwell. They've signed this Musa, who was up front. Where's he gone? What's happened to him?
Who couldn't even do it at Bournemouth. Yeah, yes. To his credit, he got a few goals at Sheffield United.
But where's he gone?
Yeah, is he going to be the standard to keep him up?
No.
Long term.
Berger, the Scandinavian. They've signed Kian Bryan, who never plays football for them, but had struggled at Oldham Athletic on loan, Manchester City youth. So I don't believe they've recruited wisely for this moment, when they do go into a bit of a rut and a little bit of a lull, and they can call upon five or six players. Could Billy Sharp do it for 6 weeks continuously in the Premier League? It looks like not, because he's never given that chance. So the undercard, if you like, Stel, and what's been recruited doesn't look like it's supplemented the brilliance of Sheffield United in the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, it's a shame, isn't it? Because, as you said, Wilder's worked really, really hard to get them promoted and give them a respectable position in the league table last season. You know, up until the break, because of lockdown, they were in contention for even top four, weren't they? People talking about possibly that happening, and even a Europa League spot. So, yeah, I think it's horrible what's happened to Sheffield United. They've been so unfortunate, as you mentioned, with the injuries, with certain decisions not going their way. But I think this is probably Wilder's biggest test to get that confidence back, because it's all well and good getting the results on the pitch, but when they're suffering a lull, when they're going through a bad patch like this, your character, your test of mental strength and your test of your managerial leadership skills are on the line here, aren't they?
Yeah, and honestly, it's like they've been cursed. I know I've mentioned it, but the Norwood free kick at the Holt end, it was that far in. Chris Wilder said the ball was halfway up the Holt end. And, you know, Aston Villa stayed up by a point that they gained that day, and Sheffield United should have had 3 points that day, would have took them into the top five, and who knows what that momentum would have done towards the end of the season and into this one. They've literally not really been able to put anything good together since that moment. It's like temporarily the curse.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Well, let's talk about another club who appear to have some sort of curse lifted, albeit temporarily, possibly. And that's West Ham, Rod. They beat Wolves 4-0 tonight. Two from Bowen, an own goal from Jimenez, and Haller came off the bench to score an injury time. Now, David Moyes right now, I said the other week that was a second nail in his coffin after West Ham lost, but tonight, he was living the dream. He was playing Championship Manager from home. He's self-isolating, and he was managing his team from his bedroom or where he was watching the game. Big result for West Ham. It will do great for their confidence. But at the same time, you still got fans questioning the team sheets, the players, etc., etc., and all the shit that's going on with the club in the background. But take nothing away from their performance tonight. They absolutely bossed Wolves, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Still, what's what of it? What you know? What there's loads of teams that the fans question the manager. Everyone's a UEFA coach.
Yes, but West Ham are World Cup winners, Rod. West Ham are World Cup winners. They've got to be doing better.
It was 50 years ago. Now, it's a great result. It's a weird one. 4-0, Wolves. That's something's really gone wrong there, because it's not like Wolves to get beat 4-0 the way they play. So that's a surprise, but it's a great result for David Moyes and a great result for West Ham, because they're well in need of it, because they're not starting off the greatest. And it's a fantastic win. But has he still got nails in the cover? I don't agree with that. We talked about this last week. I think he's, you know, if they got rid of him now, it'd just be an absolute nightmare again. They shouldn't have got rid of him the first time. He's a safe option. He's just like Roy Hodgson, really, and that's they're happy with that. So to get rid of him would be daft.
I think this win is like a stay of execution. I still think he ain't going to last till Christmas. I think he'll be gone before Christmas. That's my opinion.
Would that be a mistake then, wouldn't it? Like, it was a mistake to get rid of him the last time, and then they got rid of him, and then they're fighting relegation again. They've got to bring him back in. It's just they've done this before with Sam Allardyce. They brought him back in to save him. He saved him, and he got rid of him. You've got to give these managers more time. You can't just keep bringing him in and expect him to make wonders. It just doesn't happen.
We're forgetting something here. He's not been within 30 miles of the stadium tonight, has he? So I'm sure, you know, somebody else has done the team talk. Somebody else has made the substitution. Somebody else has trained the team yesterday. He's supposedly been watching this from his bedroom. I think probably the credit goes to the staff that have done it without him. They've won two games without him even being there. That possibly tells the story.
But that's his coach. That's his, like, his number two, who's been with him for like 25 years. So they'll know each other inside out. So there won't be nothing new that they'll be doing or be saying.
No, but quite often, no, not quite often, that's unfair, but often players enjoy playing for the assistant manager rather than the manager. This might just be something that triggers West Ham moving forward. Who's to say the assistant manager is not better than the manager?
Who's the assistant manager? What's his name?
Alan Irvine.
And he used to manage Preston.
Yeah.
Wasn't he at West Brom at one point as well?
Yeah, he's had a great career. Yeah, he's a good coach.
I think everyone's.
This is what I mean. This is. But he's a good coach. Is he a good manager?
Well, I think Stuart Pearce has come back as well. There are a load of good coaches, but you defined your legacy is left by your results. And like I say, he's the manager of West Ham, but they've won two games from his bedroom. I can't imagine he's done much. I'd say it's credit to the players. I'd say it's credit to the staff who are in the electric chair.
Well, so I'm going to throw in another one here. So are we saying, or are we trying to say that perhaps David Moyes isn't as inspirational as his number two?
Well, no, they are actually similar characters from what I can gather. But David Moyes is one of the greatest consistent managers that earned the right to manage the biggest club in the world. And everyone believed at the right time it was the right choice, and also on the recommendation of Sir Alex Ferguson. So he's got unbelievable pedigree, but I'm not convinced that he's the right man, you know, to still be that man in the Premier League. And you know, West Ham have just basically had their best result for a hell of a long time, and he wasn't at the stadium.
See, I'm chirping in now. Two things. One, I don't think West Ham will sack David Moyes just because it will cost them money. And they're so tight, they won't get rid of him for that reason alone. I do think, going back, I'll harp on to what Rod said before. He steadied the ship first time round. The owners got ahead of themselves and then tried to sack him off and get Pellegrini in. It failed massively. And they've almost had to go crawling back to him. He's a safe, steady pair of hands, and I think that's what his coaching staff bring to it as well.
Can I just say that a safe, steady pair of hands, no one would deny. But if, God willing, everything goes well with this pandemic, and you can go and get, you know, 60,000 in that stadium, and another 100,000 West Ham fans all over the world, you know, let's say there's even more. they'll want more than a steady, safe pair of hands.
Oh no, I completely agree there. I do think that it limits them. But the harsh reality is right now, and unfortunately for West Ham fans, you just need to be grateful you're in the Prem.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Because the way that their club is run is an absolute shambles. And I feel for the West Ham fans.
Yeah. Well, they keep dicing, as Roger said, they keep dicing with near relegation and then they have to be saved. But I do think their ambitions are top 10.
Yeah, but they won't invest.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well, let's talk about another club that actually has invested, and that's your boy Stez, Man City. Went down 5-2 against Leicester this afternoon. I'm not going to lie to you, the result didn't surprise me given the way Leicester played, the way that they defended, the way that they were so organised, the way they hit City on the counter-attack. Two penalties, a hat-trick from Jamie Vardy, a fantastic strike from Madison. There's so many things to unpack from this game, isn't there? But I guess we'll have to start with Man City and their defensive deficiencies. I guess that's the word we can really use. I know you guys have signed Ruben Dias, who is a fantastic central defender from Benfica. Otamendi's going the other way in a separate deal. But when you look at the options available to Pep Guardiola, especially going forward with Jesus out, with Aguero out, Sterling isn't in form at the moment. You're relying heavily on Kevin De Bruyne. It's testing times now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And we had a great hour a few months ago. And I suggested that Man City, there was room for five new defenders. And it shocked a few people when you say it. But then when you strip it back, Stones played the other night, but then hasn't played today. So, you know, you're still not convinced by him. You're not convinced by both left-backs, Zinchenko and Mendy. Cancelo didn't play. Otamendi's gone. And this Garcia is one of the worst defenders I've seen playing a Manchester City shirt since I was born. I don't see an attribute. All I saw today was the skull cap. He may as well have had a sign on his head saying, come and hit me, I'm soft. Now, if that's a medical condition and he has to wear it, choose somebody else, because that means your centre-half is not in the right condition to head the ball. As Gary Neville said on the TV, if that's a personal choice, it wouldn't be his preference or many other people's. I totally agree. I think it's just a sign of weakness. He's supposed to be wanting to leave to go to Barcelona. So there's five defenders, vacancies to come into your squad, which still remains. And we had this discussion 6 months ago. I think the manager looks painfully tired. I don't think he can handle being a chaser. I don't think he can handle the speed and the power of Klopp and his Liverpool team and what they bring. And he just looks bored and tired. Again, I don't know him. I'm talking from a supporter's point of view, from the heart. But I'm not seeing any passion for the chase from the manager. And eventually that will spread to the team. You can't wish that your centre forward will be injured and then his replacement gets injured for a month too. So that's a loss. And the team just looked devoid of energy for the fight when it doesn't go their way, Stel. That's what I would say.
So where do you think his fortunes change here? Because obviously you had the Centurion season. The following season, they retained the title, which was a fantastic achievement, winning on the final day of the season. You've seen the likes of Company go, David Silva is still there. But then you've got a lot of players that are aging. But do you think that perhaps he feels they haven't backed him fully, especially in this window?
No, they've backed him. I just don't think they've got the physical competitors anymore that all had talent. Let me just reel some names off of the last 5 or 6 years, Stel. Carlos Tevez, Nigel de Jong, Yaya Toure, Vincent Kompany, Pablo Zabaleta, Joe Hart. So, you know, there's seven, say. So they're all but likely to play well in every game. But if they didn't play well, you can guarantee they'll be 100% and they'd stop their opponent playing and they'd use physical powers within the rules of the game to give their all. Now I only believe, they're not untouchable, but I only believe there is Kevin De Bruyne and Raheem Sterling. Whatever people say about Sterling, he's durable, he's fairly consistent, and De Bruyne is the best midfielder in the world. The rest are a wash of inconsistency, weakness, softness, injuries,
fragileness, and as a consequence, the manager's bought these, and he's supposed to be the best coach in the world, you know, supposedly. So he's got an opportunity to make them better, and a lot of them are getting worse, though. That's a fact.
Well, I've seen Ferran Torres come off the bench today. He didn't really get the chance to do much. Nathan Ake scored the goal, but he was iffy, to say the least. A lot of work needs to be done.
I was going to say, just pointing, harping on about the fitness levels and the injuries at City. You've got Laporta, who's injured. You've got Benjamin Mendy, who I think has been injured more times than he's been fit. And Pep has had these issues with at previous clubs, where when he was at Bayern, he had a fallout with their club doctor over the fitness of players. So obviously I'm putting two and two and hoping for four here when I'm putting this together. But if you start to look at the injuries that are building up and you look at Pep's history with other physios at his previous clubs, he obviously has a certain way of playing that club doctors might not agree with. And I think they're sort of biting the bullet because of it now. You've got two clinical strikers. I say two clinical. You've got Sergio Aguero, who's one of the most underrated Premier League strikers in history. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves, despite being phenomenal. You've got Gabriel Jesus, who always seems to be on the cusp of doing great for City, but never quite reaches that level when he gets the opportunity. But they've got no chance of goals now. They're having to rely on, as you say, an out-of-form Raheem Sterling, who's not quite accustomed to playing in the nine role, whether it be as a false nine or as a poacher. You've got De Bruyne, who's expected to sort of do everything. And if you've got a player of De Bruyne's quality, build a midfield around him. And they haven't done that. They've bought players of a similar ilk that can sort of stay a bit defensively. So you look at Rodrigo. He's, you know, a nice, tidy player, passes the ball around, stays a little bit defensive midfield-esque. Man City have missed a player like Nigel de Jong or a Yaya Toure. Yaya Toure, someone who can actually enforce their presence in the middle of the field. Because De Bruyne, for all his talents, he needs someone alongside him just to give him a bit, you know, a bit of a, almost like wrestling with a tag team partner. You've got one guy doing all the work and you've got the other guys that are just standing outside the ring waiting. He needs someone there next to him that goes, do you know what? Give it five. I'm gonna make my mark in the middle of the pitch. And credit to Nigel de Jong. He used to do that in Iniesta's chest with his boots. So.
bloody hell.
Sorry, my little mini rant there.
No, that's fine. That's fine. So, I don't know what else to pick apart when it comes to Man City's performance, to be fair.
I know something. If Gary Neville's going to have a skull cap, it's going to have to be custom made.
I was going to say, actually, we should have held a minute silence for Eric Garcia's career, because Steve absolutely buried him 6 feet deep there earlier. Steve, you're on mute, I think. Sorry.
Oh,
still on mute.
There
we go. There he is.
Yeah, I'm hoping we won't see him again. I'm hoping that's a parting shot from me and that's his farewell performance. He wants to leave. And if, you know, I'm sure there'll be many Manchester City supporters would take him to the airport gladly, because he's cost us a goal in every game he's played, I think, almost. And like I say, I don't see an attribute. I really don't. I don't see height, pace, technique, set piece, threat, bottle, love of the club. I don't see how he plays for Manchester City. I don't see him playing again.
Talking about young players who've got a love for the club, who's the young centre-back you loaned out last season? Why doesn't he get a chance? Is he good enough? I'm being blissfully ignorant here, but this is a kid that obviously loves the club and wants to do anything and everything he can for it. And even if you just get him in and around the first team, that enthusiasm that he'd bring to the team, and it would just sort of help again with the identity. I know harp on about identity at clubs.
Well, I've worked with him as I was a coach at Man City for 21 years. So I worked with him for 5 or 6 years as a very young boy. we've seen people like Dedrick Boyata get an opportunity. We've seen this Garcia getting an opportunity, and you wonder, why hasn't he had an opportunity? Well, the West Brom fans will probably tell you why, because I don't think he covered himself in much glory in the loan there. I think he had a much better loan at Blackburn Rovers last year, and I think they would probably like to sign him. That would be his level. I'm not too sure he loves the club just because he's been there since he was nine, because I think he's asked to leave a couple of times. But that could be after the lack of opportunity. There's a reason probably why he doesn't play, but equally, he has more credentials, I believe, what a centre-half should have to play in any league than I saw from Garcia today, and actually at times from John Stones. So, yeah, he has the height, he's comfortable on the ball, but I don't think he's Premier League class either, and I think he'll end up playing in the Championship.
Okay. All right, let's talk about Leicester then, Rod. Emphatic win, fantastic performance. They got everything right. Brendan Rodgers, wow. Well, he started the season like he did last. Do you think that this result will give Leicester that boost to give them that confidence for a top four spot? Because we know that they've got Europa League football to deal with this season.
Yeah, they're going to, no, I don't think they'll struggle this year, Leicester, to be honest. Not struggle, but with this Europa League, it throws a spanner in the works with people who haven't got strong squads. And I don't believe Leicester have got the strongest of squads. You know, like, for instance, if they miss Vardy for two weeks, that, you know, who are they going to replace him with? You know, he's invaluable to them. Look at him today with Victoria Natrick. He's obviously Pep's bogeyman because of the amount of goals he scored against him. So, yeah, I think they'll do okay. Maybe, you know, the top 10. But like I say, this Thursday campaign, Thursday Sunday, for some teams, it's just too much. Wolves did really well last year, but in past years we've seen teams struggle for them, and I see no different with Leicester.
Sorry, Rod. Sorry, I didn't mean to mute you there. What really impressed me most about Leicester today was their organisation defensively. You saw Mendy slipping in as a third centre-back, and they played five when City had the ball, especially in the last 20, 25 minutes. And what they've got on the counter-attack is phenomenal with Jamie Vardy. But as you said, if he's going to be out, because I know he was feeling his groin, I don't know whether it's a groin or whether it's a hernia injury, we don't know yet. But without Jamie Vardy at Leicester, we said it last season, without him in the lineup, I don't know where the goals are going to come from. Obviously, they scored five today. Three came from Jamie Vardy and two came from other players. But
They've got Barnes, they've got Tillemans, they've got Maddison. All players that'll chip in at that are really, really solid Premier League players. So I think, like I said, if he was out for a long period of time, then they'd struggle. But, you know, if they missed him for a week or so, I think they'd get by. But if they missed him for a long period, I think they're going to struggle.
Okay. Steve, I know you were waxing lyrical about Brendan Rodgers, as you mentioned, 6 months ago. Leicester had a very bad run of form back in the last season, which obviously affected their top four challenge. What do you think Brendan Rodgers is going to do different this season?
I think he's going to be better placed with his team. I think they're going to be in that fourth and fifth spot again. I think they're going to be up there all season. I agree with everything Rodgers said. You saw Leicester's League Cup performance and result to know that they're not going to be able to cope by playing a second string too often. But their first 11 is excellent. Their goalkeeper is excellent. Their centre-forward is excellent. Everybody else... they're a really, real good age. You know, Barnes, Rodri mentioned there, but he's nearly approaching 60 games now. 57 games, I think it is. They're a maturing team. A special mention for Johnny Evans, who I think gets in Manchester United and Manchester City's team today. I believe that. I certainly believed it a year ago, and I still believe it today. And
he should never have left United. Sorry, he should never have left.
They've got young players, but not teenagers as such. They've got old, maturing players, but they're not over the hill. I think it's the right time for Leicester City Football Club with the right manager to have a really good domestic season, a great training week of coaching through the week, well-drilled. You could see that today. The set plays are inventive. And obviously, they've got a quick, jet-heeled goal scorer, pretty much a legend, really, for them. At the top end of the pitch, let's hope his injury isn't too bad, despite what he did to Man City today. You want to see him playing every week in the Premier League.
I think Brendan Rodgers has been incredibly active in the transfer market, and he's been very shrewd as well. Castagna came in from Atalanta, very, very impressive since making his debut. He brought in Cengiz Under from Roma, who a couple of seasons ago was one of the top promising attacking midfielders in the world. And if you can get a tune out of him, then Leicester will be dangerous this season. But then again, going back to what I asked Rod, it's that Europa League campaign that could be detrimental to their season. I don't know. I could be wrong. But at the same time, if he gets the rotation right, and maybe if he brings in a couple more faces, because there's still a few more days left in the transfer window, if he brings in a couple more faces, then we can talk about Leicester challenging for top four again, surely.
Yeah, and let's see how deep they go in the Europa. I think we've probably seen now that Wolves might just be going up the hill to the top of the hill and might be just coming back down the hill now. Not taking this result tonight for that reason, but injuries, Jota, you know, going to Liverpool. Has he actually signed for Liverpool now? Or is that still?
Yeah,
signed for Liverpool. So I think you might see Wolves' efforts of the Europa League, the long season that they had, might just be curtailing their potential and form now. Leicester are on the way up the hill, I think, at the moment. And I think it's going to be intriguing to see, you know, how they fight on league and Europa front. Their 11 is good enough. Their 16 isn't.
Okay. There's one concern with Leicester. And it's, for me, it's how long Wilfred and Didi might be out for. Now, I know they've won five. I've realised we're saying this after they've spanked City today. But the way that Leicester tried to play is a very counter-attacking side. And they hit City with pace because Pep doesn't know how to attack, how to defend long balls or fast counter-attacks. But when Leicester have to go to other teams and there will be a battle in the midfield, have they got the quality to replace Wilfred Ndidi up until, I think it's Christmas, he might be out till, because he's a big part of the engine room. And one of the reasons why they didn't completely fall off the rails when they sold Kante was because they got him in. And I think he was a scene, he might not be like for Kante, but he's had to do that similar role. And he's done it brilliantly. Like when you look at his interceptions and his tackling stats, it shows that he breaks up opposition play. Now, have they got that man to replace him in midfield when the games are a bit more played within the middle of the park as opposed to sort of counter-attacking backs against the wall?
Yeah, very fair, yeah. Yeah, to be seen. I'll just ask you all, I mean, they're supposed to bid £30 million for James Tarkowski, another centre-half. Do you think that will go through, lads? Yes. Do you think that will be improved and will go through? Or do you think it will stay at Burnley? What do you think as a group, lads?
I think it depends on if Burnley can bring in new faces, because I highly doubt that Sean Dyche will allow this transfer to go through if Burnley don't bring in a couple more players to fill that position. Because you're losing a player there, and without bringing anyone else in prior to it. And don't forget, if Burnley get...
He might be told that you can't bring anyone in until you sold him.
Yeah, true. But at the same time, on the other foot, what I'd like to say is if they do get 30, 35 or 40 million pounds for him, other clubs are going to say, oh, Burnley have got money now, so we can up our transfer value. So
I think possibly they've inquired about Steve Cook at Bournemouth.
All right.
From what I can gather. So the you know, now is that an extra defender to go with Tarkowski, or is that because Tarkowski's going to go on the move? But I think they've inquired about Cook from Bournemouth.
The only way that Leicester should accept, that Burnley should accept this, like 30 million for him, is if, well, I say the only way, they need to have a defender in place, and I can see it becoming dragged out until dead, like up until the 11th hour,
and Leicester will throw in one of their defenders that they don't quite use often. I think, is it Benkovic? They don't use him as much. He's sort of on the fringes, like he's one of their first choice backup centre backs. I can see him going the other way. And it's the type of deal that you see the right at the end of the transfer window. Yeah, you put the money in for a big player or for a key player, and you throw them a sort of a reserve player back the other way just to keep him ticking over. And I think Burnley might be put in that position. I don't think Sean Dyche will want it, but depends if the owners overrule him on the transfer.
So what about Godfrey at Norwich City? Is he a possibility? Because they're languishing in mid-table at the moment. They haven't started well at all.
He wouldn't be for me. No, he's been relegated and he's in the middle of the Championship team. To then go and try and play in the top six of the Premier League. He's a converted midfield player playing at the back, learning his trade. A really, really good player in a poor Norwich team. And he probably will get promoted with Norwich eventually again, or he'll go into the Premier League. But I don't see Godfrey going to Leicester. I don't know if there's any interest, but I don't see Ben Godfrey leaving Norwich and improving Leicester City, albeit it could do, as we were talking about before, if it's to improve their squad. I don't think Everton can improve their team.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, one more thing before we wrap up, gentlemen. There's a big game tomorrow, Arsenal against Liverpool. Steve, what are your thoughts on this game? Because your boys have been doing pretty well so far this season.
We've done all right so far, and I think the West Ham... I mean, even West Ham played quite well against us the other week, and we were fortunate to get the 3 points there, make no doubt about it. I think it's going to be a very tricky one. I think... Klopp's going to be very aware of how Arteta set up last time. And in the back of his mind, Arteta's played him twice and beaten him twice now, albeit one is on penalties. So Klopp will kind of have his wits about him. I actually think Liverpool might go to a 4-2-3-1 and play with Salah in the number 10 role, because they did that against us towards the end of the Community Shield game. And it completely changed it. Arsenal didn't know how to play with the back three or converting to the back five or even shifting to a back four. And whilst Arteta's tactically adaptable, and it's been refreshing for Arsenal fans to see this, I don't know if we quite have that squad ready to be competing against the top four teams week in, week out. And Liverpool will obviously want to make a statement. They get this, they potentially go top of the league with some of their goal differences. And let's put it this way, I'd be grateful for a draw. And it's not me being pessimistic, it's just I do think Liverpool will come out all guns blazing. Stel, you're on mute.
God damn it. It's the third time I've done this today. Jesus. Look, don't forget Arteta's beaten Liverpool twice in the past few months. And I think Liverpool have got their defensive frailties. Granted, conceding three goals at home against Leeds, some may say, was a freak incident. They kept a clean sheet against Chelsea, who'd be misfiring. But then again, when you look at Liverpool going forward with the fullbacks bombing forward, the amount of space that Aubameyang is going to have on that left-hand side, he can kill teams. We know how good this player is. And I think if Liverpool don't get their system right and, keep Arsenal from scoring in the first half an hour, 45 minutes, they will struggle. They will struggle.
I think the biggest key thing for Arsenal is if Kieran Tierney's playing. If he's playing, we will cause him trouble.
I think he's out. I took him out of my FPL because he's injured. So,
apparently he's fit to play, but they're going to do a test. They're going to do a fitness test before the game, and if there's any discomfort, they're going to leave him out.
You can't play him. Not in a game like this.
But what I'm starting to realise now is he's integral to our team. The way that he comes out, he plays the ball. He can play the long balls. His long passing is, I think, exquisite. But he can also, he's got the energy to double up as a second left wing back. And you've seen it in so many clips that they've shown. Arsenal scored the same identical goal with Aubameyang. And then you've got Maitland-Niles and Kieran Tierney running on behind him, where they've overloaded down the left-hand channel.
And if he's not playing and you've got Kolasinac, yeah, if he's playing instead, then that's why I think Liverpool will have an absolute field day. Mm. But if Kieran Tierney, by hook or by crook, is starting, I think it will be a completely different story.
Rod, home win?
Is it Liverpool at home?
I believe so.
I fancy a score draw on this one, you know.
Okay, any reason?
No, I just fancy Arteta's had Liverpool's number at the minute. And like you say, I think Aubameyang, he's good for a couple. But it's just how many Liverpool scored, so.
It's that simple, eh?
Yeah, they could score 3 or 4.
Okay, fair enough.
There's going to be a lot of goals anyway.
Okay. Stez, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm liking Arteta's work. I can liken it possibly to the fact that is this contributing to it's not a demise of Pep Guardiola, but the, you know, slightly out of form Guardiola. Is it because he's right on man Arteta, his brains perhaps, his support for sure has left and he's now doing his own thing and improving Arsenal? I'm liking what they do. They play Liverpool twice this week. I'm not suggesting that Liverpool will win both games, but I do think they'll win tomorrow night. Liverpool.
Fantastic. And on a final note, Stez, I know you said that Brendan Rodgers is your tip to be the next City manager. What about Arteta? Do you think there's a strong possibility he could come in?
Could be.
Don't take him away. Don't take him away from us.
Could be. And if they overachieve in the Premier League, they have to become candidates should that position become available. When it does, but in the meantime, I'd like to see more energy coming from the current City manager, Pep Guardiola. I'd like to see it being transferred back into the team. I'd like to see him perform better as a chaser behind Klopp instead of in front of him. And I'd like to see us get back to top spot. You know, it's just one game today. So obviously, I don't want to see Pep Guardiola leave, but I do want to see him re-energise because I think he's lost a bit of his energy.
Fantastic. Right, that's it for another week. So it seems to be a weekend where VAR turned into VAR. Well, a lot of teams, really. But, guys, thank you for jumping on. Really appreciate it. Before I let you guys go, is there anything you guys would like to plug? You guys, like I'm sounding like a proper YouTuber now. You guys. Steve. Mr. McCarthy.
There we go. Just my Twitter. It's at yours truly, Mr. Mac.
Superb, Rod.
And I will change it to Fat Luke Short one day.
I'll be waiting. Rod?
At Rod James Giggs.
Wonderful. Stairs, I know you're not on the Twitters and all that, but...
Just you, the defence, mate. Your show's a great privilege to be on. Thanks for having me again. I
appreciate it, man. How's things going from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, I'm getting about. I'm doing a bit of radio. It's not where I want to be. I want to be back in the dugout on the touchline, and I'm speaking to a couple of people, but it's slow moving, and it's an industry that's slim on opportunity when you're out of it, and I'm hoping the 30 years I was in it will just stand for something in the end.
Would you consider going abroad if the opportunity came?
Probably not. I'd miss Rodri too much, mate. I love the Manchester weather too much, Del. I don't think I could ever leave.
Oh, fair enough. Wonderful. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in.
This is Mum's pink pillows.
No, please. Yeah, mate. Come on, man. Come on, lad. Good night, lad.
Right, that's it for another week, ladies and gents. We'll be back very, very soon.